Board Game Bros. Hello, listeners.
Hey.
It's another episode of the Board Game Brothers podcast. I'm Jeffrey Craig.
And I'm Matthew Craig.
We're brothers in real life.
And game designers in real life.
And this is our podcast where we talk about board games. And it's another one of our regularly scheduled episodes of the podcast where we are going to select one game to discuss in detail. We're going to talk about how to play it. We're going to talk about some strategies in the game. And then we're going to talk about the game's design. And I was surprised that we hadn't done an episode on this game yet, because this game has kind of been a side favorite of ours.
Yeah,
we've played it a lot.
It's funny. I think for the last year and a half, we'd be like, you know, did we do an episode on this? I don't know. Did we? And then we were only just now doing it.
Yeah, it's just been kind of sitting in our collection, gathering, well, not dust, because we've been playing it, but yeah, just gathering review dust,
I guess.
All right. So Matthew, what game are we talking about today?
We are talking about Citadels, designed by Bruno Faidutti and published in 2000 by Hans M. Gluck.
Citadels.
And among its awards, it was nominated Spiel des Jahres in 2000, but did not win.
All right. So for a brief description of what Citadels is all about, in Citadels, players draft the help of influential members of medieval society in order to build the best city. At the start of each round, players draft from a pool of 8 characters with unique abilities. The characters the players draft then determine the turn order for that round, with the number 1 character going first and the number 1 character going last, or number 8 character going last. On a player's turn, they take 3 actions. First, they must gather resources, which is a choice between gaining gold or drawing district cards. Second, they may build 1 district card in their city by paying its gold cost. This is an optional action. And then third, also an optional action, at any point during their turn, a player may use the ability of their character. After each player has taken their turn, the characters are shuffled and drafted again, with the last player to draft the king, or the number 4 character, picking first in that draft. And then the game ends at the end of the round when a player builds their 7th district. At the end of that round, points are tallied and the player with the most points wins. So that's the gist of it. It's a drafting game where you're drafting your turn order and a special ability for that turn that could involve gaining you extra gold or making it easier to build certain districts. Or some way of interacting or sabotaging your opponent's plans. And there's 8 characters in every game. I think sometimes there's an optional 9th character for like more advanced games or games with more players, but typically the game involves 8 characters. And when we played this game recently, and pretty much most times we play this game, we tend to use the base set of characters. So I think going into the gameplay, a more specific description of the gameplay, we should go over what those characters are.
Right. And it should be noted that, like, current versions of Citadels come with extra characters you can swap out. But I believe this is the original 12. I mean, the original 8.
Right.
I don't know why I said 12. Okay. So, first, I do want to mention something, though. You mentioned building districts.
Right.
And I think we should go ahead and say what the 5 types of districts are before we talk about the characters.
Okay.
These are differentiated by icon and color on them. They are noble district, merchant district or trade district, religious district, war district, military district, I think, and then unique district. And so the unique districts are added to the deck of districts at the start of the game. And they all have special abilities. The other 4, right, though, are all just varying costs, ranging from, I think, 1 to 5.
Yeah, so that's, the original buildings, the buildings in the 4 districts, the 4, like, basic districts, you might call them, they range in cost from 1 to 5, and then the unique districts can range from, like, 1 to 6, I think, is the most expensive unique district. The unique districts have bonus effects. The basic districts do not. But yes, those are the 5 district types. Those are, again, noble, religious, trade, and military, and unique. And the associated colors, noble is yellow, religious is blue, trade is green, and military is red, and unique is purple. There's only 14 unique districts added to the deck, which otherwise has, let's see, It has about 30, 40, 50, 54 cards. Yeah. There's 54 cards in the deck without unique districts. Then you add 14 of the 30 unique districts and shuffle it together to make the deck for the game. And then everyone starts with 4 cards and 2 gold. And you start with the draft by, I think, the oldest player. It starts as the king in the game's rule book, but you could probably just pick that however you want. And then you go from there. Okay, so let's talk about the rolls that you get. They are numbered from 1 to 8. And in order from 1 to 8, they are in the, like, the original 8 characters. The assassin is number 1, followed by the thief at number 2, then the wizard at number
3. Magician, I think, is what it's called, but yeah.
Oh, right, magician. Wizard is a different character. The magician at number 3. The king is number 4. Bishop is number 5. Number 6 is the merchant. Number 7 is the architect. And then the final character, number 8, is the warlord. So that's assassin, thief, magician, king, bishop, merchant, architect, warlord. And each of these characters has a different ability, and that is the turn order that they will go in. So if you drafted the assassin during the drafting phase of a turn, then you get to take your turn first. And if you drafted the warlord, you're going to have to take your turn last. So let's go over the abilities of each one.
Right. So let's, I guess, first do the assassin.
Sure.
So when the assassin is revealed as their turn, they name another role. And then when that role is called out to take their turn, they don't get to take their turn.
Yeah, the assassin. Whoever drafted that role skips their turn for that round.
Yeah. And like I said, you name a role specifically. So you could name a role that nobody drafted. That's just sort of the consequence of using the assassin.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, if you're trying to target a specific player, then you have to predict what they drafted in that round.
Right.
We should also mention that when you draft the characters, the draft is set up so that you can never guarantee or never 100% know what someone drafted. At the start, it depends on the number of players, but essentially... the way that it works is you set some of the cards face down and possibly face up, depending on how few players are playing. And then you draft all of the characters in the hand, except there will always be one remaining at the end. So the second to last picker doesn't know exactly what the last person picked. And there's always also at least one face down card, so that the person drafting second doesn't always 100% know what the person drafting first picked.
Right.
The person drafting first is the only person that knows the first face down card, and the person drafting last is the only person that knows which role was not drafted from the hand that round. But yeah, there's never guaranteed information in the draft. So then going back to the assassin's ability where you choose a role, it's possible that you choose one of those face down roles that nobody picked, because it was set aside at the start of the draft or just not picked through the whole draft. So you just have to be clever, and you have to sort of try to get into people's minds to figure out who may have picked what, so that you can target someone with a specific role. There's also just the chance that you might just want to target a specific role for strategy reasons, because, for example, the king gets to start the draft, and if you like where you are in the draft and you don't want anyone else to pick the king and change the draft order, then you might just assassinate the king.
Right.
Okay, so next is the thief.
Similar to the assassin. No, I was going to go into strategy a bit later, okay. But... yeah, so the thief is similar to the assassin. The thief names a role, and when a player takes their turn with that role for this round, that player first gives all their money to the thief.
Again, it's important to note that the thief doesn't choose a player, they choose a role. And so if there's somebody with a lot of money, you have to predict what they drafted in order to get that money. Third is the magician. Oh, it should also be pointed out that the thief, since they go after the assassin, they can never choose the assassin to steal from, because they get the money at the start of that player's turn, and the assassin has already taken their turn.
Right.
All right, so the third is the magician. The magician's ability is at any point during their turn, they can choose to either discard any number of cards to draw that many cards. And again, the cards are the districts that you build. They're district cards. or the magician can choose to trade hands with another player. So one or the other, the magician can perform on their turn. Right. The king is where we start getting into roles that have an associated district. So at any point on the king's turn, they can gain one gold for each of their noble districts in their city. The king also gets to draft first, and they get a little first player token to show that. Also, I think this might be a rule in the game. I'm not sure if this is a rule in the game, but we play that the king is the one who announces the turn order. So rather than just leaving it to all the players to pay attention to when their turn is up, the king will announce it after one player. So after the magician has finished their turn, then the king will declare that it is the king's turn.
Yeah, it helps keep things structured. Yeah,
it helps keep things moving. This is definitely a house rule, but in our house, if you're the king, you also have to use a goofy old man voice as the king when you announce the player turn order. Moving on, number five is the bishop. The bishop, at any point during their turn, they can gain one gold for each of their religious districts. The bishop has a passive ability, which is that they cannot be targeted by the warlord or any other character in the number eight slot. And we'll explain what that means in a second when we get to the warlord. But before that, we have the merchant at number six. The merchant gains one gold for each of their trade districts at any point during their turn. The merchant also gets two gold at regardless of how they gather resources. And again, gathering resources is a choice between either gaining gold or gaining cards or gaining a new card. So the merchant gets bonus gold.
Right. It should be mentioned, by the way, that all of these effects that give you gold for each of your districts of a certain type can be used after you build a district that turn. So right. With the merchant, you can get the gold from its first ability that you automatically get, use that to build a trade district, and then get one gold from that trade district.
Yes.
Right. Then number seven is the architect.
Mm-hmm.
And the architect has a passive that lets you build two additional buildings this turn, the turn you have it. And then I believe it lets you draw three cards when you draw cards for that turn.
It lets you draw two extra cards.
Right.
In addition, it's just a bonus two cards. It has nothing to do with how you gather resources.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So the architect's sort of like the inverse of the merchant.
Or the counterpart.
Yeah. And then the final one is the warlord. So mm-hmm. The warlord gives you one gold for each of your military districts. And then once per turn, you can target another player's district, pay gold equal to that district's cost minus one, and destroy their district.
Mm-hmm.
Put it on the bottom of the deck. One important thing to note with this is that it does not have a minimum. So if you have a one cost district, it would be free for the warlord to destroy it. Of course, the bishop ignores the warlord.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the bishop cannot be targeted by the warlord, or the number five slot cannot be targeted by the number eight slot.
Yeah.
At least in this version of the game. I think if you were to replace the warlord with another role, that those roles still target other players in certain ways, and the bishop still it cannot be targeted by them.
Right.
Regardless of how that's set up. It should be noted that the warlord is the only character that targets people and not roles, because it goes last.
The magician also targets people.
Oh, right. That's right. Okay, never mind then.
Hmm.
Moving on.
Yeah.
Let's see. Is there anything else we need to explain about how to play the game?
Quick note on scoring. Yeah.
Yes. So at the end of the game, the game ends at the end of a round where someone plays their seventh district. And that means that after someone has played their seventh district, you go through to the warlord and then you count points. So every district in your city is worth a point for every gold it costs to build it. So a district that costs three gold to build, it's worth 3 points at the end of the game, so on and so forth. You get three bonus points if you have one district of every type including unique. So that means one noble, one trade, one religious, one military, and one unique. If you have one of each, you have three bonus points there. If you're the first player to complete your city, means you're the first person to have built the seventh district in your city, then you get four bonus points. And then if you aren't the first player to do it, but you are able to build all seven districts in your city by the end of the game, that gives you two bonus points. And then certain unique buildings or certain unique districts will give you bonus points in certain ways. Like, for example, the Dragon's Gate is only worth 6 gold, but at the end of the game, it scores you 2 bonus points. So it's kind of like it was it's worth 8 gold in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's other strange effects to the unique cards that can score you other bonus points. So you just tally all that up, and whoever has the most points from that total wins.
Yes. All right. So pretty much as a drafting game, one of the big things you want to do is pay attention to drafting patterns of the other players. So, like, if you see people taking the same card in the same situation, like when they're low on gold, they take the merchant a lot, or when they don't have any cards in hand, they go for the architect, you can kind of intuit what they'll do in future situations of a similar type. Or like, if somebody is very protective of being the king, you can assume that either they're going to take the king more, or they're going to assassinate the king. And so you might not want to pick the king if it comes to you.
So this involves like reading the players themselves and paying very close attention to that. I think that that's like maybe like level 2 of drafting strategy. So real quick, I want to just go over some like level 1 drafting strategy.
Sure.
Some stuff that doesn't require you to like really read someone's patterns and pay attention to like what each individual person is doing. Like, for example, level 1 drafting strategy is just remembering what's in the hand that you passed.
Oh, yeah.
This is like the most basic thing that you have to do in this game.
Yeah. So, yeah, if you pick the assassin, then you at least know that there's a good chance that if you pass like 3 cards, 2 of those are going to be in the game. You know, especially if they're 3 good ones. Or if you're the first player and you pick the assassin, then you know what roles will be available to choose from, and you know at least one that you shouldn't choose.
Same thing with the thief. If you pick the thief and you pass a bunch of other cards, you should memorize what those cards were, or you should at least look at those cards and then look at the other players and then see like, okay, even like if they're not likely to pick, like even before any patterns have been established, somebody that's low on cards is still more likely to pick the architect than any other role, because that's just generally a good thing to do for them. And same with the money and the merchant, and also having fewer cards, the wizard can be good, or magician, sorry.
Right.
So just kind of taking note of that before you pass the cards is still good. Just saying like, oh, I'm passing a merchant and somebody down the line doesn't have a lot of money, but they do have a lot of districts, so I should try and target them. So I'm just going to pick the merchant.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want to pass the cards and then pick the merchant just to realize like the merchant wasn't even in the hand that you passed.
Right.
So that's like basic drafting strategy. Just be aware of what you're passing. And I think as a general rule of thumb, it's safe to say like more often than not, someone that's low on resources will take a card that will help them replenish their resources.
Yeah.
There's one thing that's unique to this game, and especially unique to this batch of characters, that I've encountered with like every playgroup that I've played this game with, and that is the interesting decision moment in the draft, which comes every now and then. There will be a draft and a hand will get passed to a player, and then it'll give them pause, and sometimes they'll say something like, wow, what a weird hand I've just been passed. And in literally every playgroup I've played this with, that means that hand has like the assassin, the thief, the king, or any combination of those three, like 2 of those 3 or all 3 of those.
Yeah, like the assassin, very desirable the thief, ones.
Yes, exactly. Specifically the assassin, the thief, and the king. So, and like I've tested this with at least three different play groups, and it's held true. It's not guaranteed, but I believe that if you hear something like that at the table, that generally means that like the assassin, the thief, and the king are in the hand that the person is looking at.
Try it at home.
Yeah. So the reason why this might be useful is if you pick the thief and you're trying to solo out one particular person, and the hand gets passed by them and it lands on somebody else and they say, whoa, what an interesting decision. Then you know that the person didn't pick the assassin if the assassin was in the hand, and they didn't pick the king probably, because the king is an interesting decision, to be passed very late in a draft. So there's other situations where it could be very useful as well, but just know that. And also know that if you get past those three roles or some combination of those three roles, don't say that it's an interesting decision.
Yeah.
Keep a straight face.
That's another basic rule
of drafting. Keep a straight face.
Yeah. Don't give away too much about your hand.
Mm-hmm. Like I do. I have a problem with that.
If you're going to make a funny face, at least make a joke or something to disguise what you're making a funny face about.
Mm-hmm. One other thing about, so we talked about like, somebody low on resources is more likely to pick a character that gives you a lot of resources. So because of that, you should not pick that character. You should leave it to them, at least to get targeted. Because if somebody's trying to target them, then you're more likely to get caught in the crossfire, so to speak. Because like you say, like, oh, this person really wants the architect, so I'm going to take it instead, so they can't get it. But then the thief gets revealed and the thief is like, oh, I'm going to steal from the architect because I think that person who really needed it definitely picked it. But no, you picked it. So avoid that.
Right. Yeah. I want to talk a bit about the one cost districts, because these can be pretty risky to play early because they're free for the warlord to destroy. So like it's almost always in the warlord's best interest if they're not going to destroy anything else to at least destroy the one that's for free. I think there are three specific instances where they can be really useful, though. So, like, one thing is that they kind of work as an investment for a turn. Because, like, I guess you pay a gold, and then you get a gold back next turn, which isn't really an investment. It's netting one gold. But
that's
like,
to say, if you draft the character that gains a gold from whatever
exactly
type of district you built. Yeah.
But with bishops, you're usually able to get more value out of them. So if you play a religious district that's cost one gold, and then you can draft the bishop to get more money off of that while keeping it safe, technically that does mean you're more likely to take the bishop, so other people might predict that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not the best situation. On the other hand, one cost districts are pretty good on the final round, especially if like you're very sure nobody's going to pick warlord, or if you're behind, because if somebody picks warlord in the final round, they're probably looking at whoever's in first. And so like if you don't have even seven built districts, it might be all right. You can also use the one cost district to finish that one of each district criteria, or to finish your city.
It should be noted that the warlord can't destroy the seventh district of a district or of a city.
Right.
I think that so, if you get to seven districts, then the warlord can't target you either. So yeah, if you finish your district or your city with that one cost district, then that kind of like really solidifies your position.
Right. And especially if you have like the architect, you can use one cost to kind of sneak out a win.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I think two cost districts are kind of the baseline for an early investment for what you want to play, because at that point it costs the warlord a gold to destroy it, and also it only takes one more turn of income to replace it, so it's not the worst when you lose it.
My philosophy with districts is it's better to spend your money than to save it in this game. There's tons of ways to lose money, especially just with the thief, the thief existing. I guess there's not tons. There's just one way to lose money, but it's
loses
just
all your money.
It's just an always. Yeah, you'll lose all your money. It's this looming threat. And so you, it's better to spend it than to save it. So like, if turn one is just like get 2 gold, play a 3-cost district, that's a really good turn one, because now the thief is less likely to target you. And a 3-cost district, it's not nothing.
Right. It's much more of an investment for the warlord to destroy it too.
Exactly. Yeah. A warlord would rather save that 2 gold. So that next turn they can get 2 more gold and pay a 4-cost district instead of like using it to destroy a random 3-cost district.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think 2 is kind of like the break point for like, is it worth it for the warlord?
Mm-hmm.
Especially because it's like, instead of paying half the cost or no cost, you're paying 2/3 of the cost of the district.
Right.
That's a pretty big investment.
Right. And two gold is a whole turn of income.
Right. Yeah, you basically wasted your turn unless you have military districts to make up your money. So I'd say that it's best to try and keep up with the person in first or be at least one building behind them until that very end of the game. It's a pretty big deal in this game to not be a threat, since this game is all about like trying to target other people.
Yeah.
It seems like what most of the, at least most of the impactful characters in this game are all about targeting other people. So you don't want to have a target on you. So try not to get too far ahead. Mm-hmm. Is sort of what I'm getting at there. Unique districts. You need at least one to get one of every district, which is an important point value to cash in on at the end of the game. So if you don't have any in your opening hand, definitely build like a 3 or a 4 cost that you've got sitting in your hand, and then try and start trading it away with the magician or whatever means you have to get those unique districts.
Right.
You need at least one, and they can be very useful.
Mm-hmm.
I think of the 4 other districts, green obviously generates the most value because it gets you gold from the character that also just straight up gives you gold.
Right. Though I think personally the religious districts are a little better because you're more likely to be past the bishop.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, the bishop, and I think the warlord is also a pretty undesirable character.
At least in our play group.
In our play group, yeah. People hate on the warlord. People are the warlord is, I don't know. Yeah. It doesn't get no respect.
Yeah.
So yeah, in our playgroup, the merchant certainly gets targeted more than the bishop and the warlord. So like, in the grand scheme of things, probably like at the end of the day, the blue and the red districts will end up generating more value because they got less targeted by the assassin.
Right, and they don't get picked as often, so you're more likely to pick them yourself.
Sure. Yeah, definitely the noble districts are probably the hardest to cash in on. I think the king gets like unreasonably targeted in this game.
Yeah.
Personally, I don't think the draft order is all that important.
Right.
Unless you're like the very last player, it can kind of suck. But yeah, it like if you're just having to choose between like 3 or 4 characters, generally you can get value of any of those characters, and if they're like some of the less desirable characters, that's usually a good thing because that means you're actually taking your turns instead of getting assassinated or robbed.
Yeah, that all checks out.
Yeah, again, usually the 3, 5, and 8 cost, or the 8-number characters, are the ones that get targeted the least. But that also means that later in the game, somebody who's really far ahead is more likely to be picking those boring characters to evade the attention of other players.
Right.
I think that's about all I have written down for strategy.
Yeah.
Spend your gold.
Yeah, spend your gold.
I think that's the big thing in this game. Other than like all of the drafting strategy that you can employ, spend your gold.
Yeah.
Don't save it. Okay. How it was Citadel's, let's talk about the design.
Yeah, so
we can't really say how it was designed
because
it was designed a while ago. And also, by the way, the version that we're talking about is slightly different than the original version. The original version had you had to have 8 districts to finish your city.
Oh yeah.
Among other differences. Anyways.
So I think the biggest thing you'll notice playing the game is the round structure and how that works. It feels like sort of why there is this dynamic round turn order. It might not be specifically because of the effects of the characters, but the order that the characters go in and their effects are very tied together and kind of balanced around each other. So, like, the assassin and the thief go so early because there's more unknown roles for every player. You know, not only does the thief have to make not only can the thief only name a specific role, but, like, if two players out of six had their roles face up already, and the thief, like, passed cards along, they can probably really easily guess who has which character specifically from the rest of them, if they were to do that. And so that's sort of why those go early on. And then the warlord goes late because it can destroy buildings that are built in the same turn. And so if the turn order was also like based on the starting player, like the person who's the king, then it would mess with these like central functions. Instead, it all kind of works together to keep each other in check based on the turn order. And even then,
go ahead, keep going.
I was gonna say, even then, like, the turn order isn't that important because for the most part players are doing the same actions on their turn. It's really like the few roles that are specifically based or specifically balanced by turn order that matter.
I think, yeah, the way that the turn order, the modular turn order in this game is just sort of like so wrapped around so many parts of this game, and it all makes a whole lot of sense that it should be, I think is a pretty respectable part about this game's design. Like, I've played tons of games where the turn order is not determined by how you're sitting at the table, but by some other function of the game. And this is probably the most fluid game to have that kind of system to it.
Right. It's really elegant.
So in addition to that, I guess maybe this isn't in addition to that. This is a separate idea. But for some reason, I know a ton of people that hate drafts and they love this game. Mm-hmm. Like they don't go to like other drafting events or they don't play a lot of other drafting games, but they do love this game. I think this is an interesting thing that this is maybe one of the most draftinist games there is. like there's a huge emphasis on reading the draft because right. You have to. And I think one reason why people like that is because it's basically the whole game is just the draft. So there's not much else to distract you from it. But yeah, it's like it's the draftiness game around. Like you have to really, really think about what people are picking or what people are targeting if they are picking the assassin and the thief. To inform like what role you pick so that you don't get targeted, or to determine like what role you choose as the assassin or thief so that you can get the most value and stop someone from taking the game and running right. with it.
So I was gonna say, I think part of this is because there's this idea of intentionality in competitive games, which is when like a player knows exactly the consequences of their actions, and when they choose an action, they know like the full reason why they're doing it. And I think this game approaches intentionality really quickly because for the most part the like A to B to C consequences make sense and they're very clear. Like it's not too obscure or too complicated that picking the assassin means you have to pay attention to who other people pick. Mm-hmm. Or to say like picking the merchant means you're likely to be robbed from. That sort of consequence is very clear in this game, whereas in other drafting games there might be like other resources that you have to play or like an engine you work around that makes these extra steps between the action you take and the outcome that you get.
Mm-hmm. It probably also helps that you're drafting the same eight things every turn until the end of the game. So it's not like you see a new thing in your hand and you have to sort of assess the value of drafting it every round. Although that would be an interesting way to play this game, is that every round you replace the eight rolls with eight new rolls.
Mm-hmm.
It would function, I think.
Yeah.
The way that you're supposed to play this game, there is that thing where like you become very intimately familiar with like how each thing functions, and you do start to like even if you're not doing it intentionally, you sort of intuitively pick up what each role means to each player at different points of the game. And you do sort of start to figure out like, oh, this person is really, or this role is really getting targeted every time by the assassin. Or like, you'll notice like this team or this play group hates when the king changes. They keep targeting the king. I'm never going to draft the king in this game.
Yeah. I think it's also interesting that when you have these unique roles, you tend to notice who picks them the most often, just because like your eyes will wander to who, you know, because like if somebody says like, you know, merchant, take your turn, you're going to look around the table to who's taking their turn. And if you see the same person doing it over and over again, you very quickly are like, wow, they're taking the merchant again.
Mm-hmm.
Like your eyes aren't moving around as much. You kind of already know where they're going. It very like emphasizes that. And I think something that's interesting in a similar way is that the assassin and the thief are like two of the most powerful roles in the game, but they are the ones that require you to pay attention to the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And then like the ones that don't require you to pay attention to the draft are the ones that give you a lot of resources. So like it's almost like people that don't pay as much attention aren't gonna focus on the assassin or the thief, but they might be drawn more to like the roles that are less obvious, like mm-hmm. the bishop, you know.
Mm-hmm. It's also interesting that the assassin, the one who goes very first in a turn, who's guaranteed to take their turn, has the slowest tempo of any role in the game, because they don't get any bonus resources from anything. Like the assassin takes the most normal turn of the game.
Yeah,
the most boring turn of the game.
And the thief is also very swingy.
But the thief is swingy. Also, the thief doesn't get to use the resources that they gain from their effect that turn. They have to hold on to them till the next turn, which means that they need to evade the thief of the next turn.
Yeah.
And because they're thief, that means they're not king, so they can't guaranteed like draft the card they need. But the assassin, they get the strongest ability. They make one player completely skip their entire turn, but then they get to go first, which means their turn is guaranteed, but they also don't get any tempo in the game.
Yeah.
Which is another good point of balance in this game. Like the assassin and the thief could be switched, but they're mm-hmm. not. It's also interesting that the assassin could technically pick the thief.
Yeah. Cause then I guess the assassin can keep the thief from getting more money.
Mm-hmm. Or the assassin could just think like, oh, I think this person took the thief and I don't want them to take a turn this round, so
right,
I'm pretty sure I'm just gonna assassinate them.
Right. I think it's interesting how the starting player isn't quite as valuable in this as it is in similar drafting games. You know, normally taking the first turn would be huge, but since in this game players kind of operate on very similar axes most of the time, like often the reason why you're taking starting player is because you either need one specific role the next turn, or you're having a hard time with the information you're not getting and you want to have like more information.
Mm-hmm.
But since turn order is based off the roles you draft, and even then you can get past a good role, it doesn't matter as much getting an early start or an early spot in the turn.
Yeah, even if like the role you need, usually if you need a role, that means it's probably one of the later roles, because like you need like a large influx of gold or cards. But I mean, any role that you need that's not the assassin or thief has the potential of being targeted by the assassin or thief. And if you don't need the assassin or thief, that means you're passing the assassin or thief. And that means that somebody who's like next to you or after them is going to have a good chance of guessing what you picked.
Right.
So there's a lot of self-balancing. Like if somebody needs something, then somebody will be able to understand that and prevent you from getting it.
Right. It also helps that like there are pretty much like if you think about the main reason why you're picking a role, for the most part, there's at least one other role that does a similar thing. So what I mean is like if you need a lot of money, you can get the merchant or the thief or technically like bishop or warlord or something. If you need to get districts, you can pick the architect or the magician.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you need to keep another player from building a district, you can get the warlord, which can destroy one, or the assassin, which can make them skip their turn, or the magician, which trades hands with them.
So or the thief, which can just take their money away.
Yeah, so they can't exactly.
Yeah.
So even if you don't get past one of those roles, there's a good chance you'll get past another one that does a similar action to what you want.
Mm-hmm.
So unless you get assassinated, it's not often that you're completely out of turn with nothing to do. Unless you're assassinated.
Mm-hmm.
I also think going back a bit to like making the consequences of actions clear, this game uses pretty low numbers with like the costs of cards. Yeah,
one to six.
It makes
you get 2 gold whenever you gain gold.
Yeah, it makes math pretty easy, but it also really quickly lets you understand like the difference between 3 gold and 4 gold districts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of them is a little cheaper but harder to get because it, or a little cheaper, but you know, at the same time, it doesn't give you as many points. But the more expensive one is much harder to build because it takes 2 turns of normal income.
Mm-hmm. That and type a 5-cost building, forget it.
Yeah,
5-cost buildings are impossible to build unless you have like a couple districts to gain money from their respective roles, or
a lucky thief turn,
or a lucky merchant turn where nobody targets you.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think it's good a good call that the character cards in the deluxe version of the game, and I think maybe in like the re-release of the game, are on like extra large cards.
Mm-hmm.
That just makes the game even more fluid, especially at the end of a turn when you need to collect all the rolls again. It's really easy to see when someone has forgotten to pass you the roll, which happens every now and then.
Yeah.
Pass the rolls, you know?
Yeah, it's like, pass the rolls. Lamberts?
Yeah, it's like Lamberts for those of you Midwesterners out there.
This game leads to some really neat storytelling moments.
Mm-hmm.
Like how, the kind of flavor makes a lot of sense. Like having war districts means that the warlord will have more like armies or resources to attack. Or having more religious districts means that the bishop is getting more donations for their church. Or also, it's really funny how, like, if the king or the starting player wants to stay starting player, they'll have assassins kill the person trying to take the throne. You know, there's something very flavorful about that interaction that comes out of just how it works. Or how the thief wants to loot the merchant because the merchants carry a lot of money. Like, that's a consequence of, or, you know, it's an outcome of the rules and how they play and how you strategize. But there's a certain amount of flavor to it that makes sense for the setting or the theme.
I guess the last thing I want to say about this game is that it has those moments where you, like, perfectly read a draft. Pretty much every time you sit down to play, there's going to be, like, one of those moments. Especially if you really search for it as a player, you can get those moments. Which are very satisfying for like anyone, any demographic, any psychographic of player can have a good time by just calling the right call.
Yeah, in this game. It's the thrill of being correct.
Yeah, and being incorrect isn't such a huge punishment in this game. It's a bigger punishment for the person that gets caught in the crossfire. And I think on your second play of this game, that's when you really start to pick up like how bad it can be if you get caught like that, getting targeted by someone who's trying to target somebody else. So and the games are short enough in my opinion, that like you could get to that second game and develop that understanding and have a very pleasurable experience after, you know, just a few sessions.
Yep.
You'll become a draft master too.
All right. Draft master two coming to you.
Coming to you this spring.
All right.
And with that, we that is our episode on Citadels. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.
If you like, you can follow us on any social media platform.
Let me make the big announcement first. So our Patreon is live at patreon.com/bgbcast. That is patreon.com/bgbcast. And we have two tiers of Patreon that you can subscribe at, or you can pay what you want. Mm-hmm. And the lowest tier will get a shout out in an episode, as well as a you can submit a question for us to answer each episode. And then the second tier, which is $5 or more a month, gets you access to both of those previous rewards, as well as our bonus side episode series, which are Board Game Bros Let's Make a Game and Board Game Bros The Dusty Shelf, the latter of which is where I review old games that we don't normally cover in this series. And those two series are on the off weeks of our podcast. So mm-hmm. the second week of the month is when the Let's Make a Game series releases, and the fourth week of the month is when the Dusty Shelf releases. And the first episode of Dusty Shelf is already live on there, and I look at the game Uno, fitting for the first episode, wink.
All right. So check out that Patreon. That's, again, patreon.com/bgbcast for those bonus episodes. If you'd like, you can follow us on social media on Facebook and Twitter at BG Bros Cast. You can go to our website, bgbcast.com, to find all of our episodes cataloged. So if you want to hear our thoughts on a specific game, you can find the tag for that game on our website, and that'll take you to the episode where we discuss it. If you don't see anything, if you don't see the game that you want to hear our thoughts on, hit us up on social media again on Facebook and Twitter at bgbcast.com. at bgbroscast on Facebook and Twitter with those suggestions. We appreciate these suggestions, and we play every game that's been suggested to us. You can go to our TeePublic store via our website. There's a link there, or you can go to teepublic.com/user/bgbcast. That's where we have our merch with our cool logo on it. Again, check out the Patreon. That's it for Board Game Bros plugs. So let's hear it for Matt plugs.
Matt plugs. Oh, woohoo. That's my new theme song I'm testing out. So I stream on twitch.tv/twack. That is twitch.tv/twak. I stream on most weekdays from about 12 or 12:30 p.m. Central Time to about 3 or 4 p.m. Central Time. I stream a lot of roguelites, platformers, difficult games. I speedrun a few different games. Lately, I've been playing through all the Shovel Knight campaigns in order, as well as playing the game Hades, which came out kind of recently in Early Access. You can also get updates on when I go live on my Twitter at Matt Craig Gaming. No, Matt Craig Gaming. Wait. Matt Craig Gaming. That's it. At Matt Craig Gaming. And also through my Twitch page, you can also reach a Discord server where you can get updates on when I go live, as well as talk with us and other fans of our work. Additionally, I also write articles on the BGB website under the Episodes and Articles tab. I believe my most recent article is on Untitled Goose Game and some of the interesting genre that it incorporates into it. And you can read that as well by looking at our tags and looking for the Matt column. And you can get updates on when I post new articles as well by following me on Twitter and on Discord. And that's about it.
All right. That does it for Matt plugs, and that does it for our episode. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.
We'll see you in 2 weeks.
See ya.